This is the Steve Shriver Podcast, where entrepreneur, adventurer, and community activist Steve Shriver shares what he's learned on his journey so you can make it in business and make it good. This special episode is being recorded live at EntreFest 2021 in Cedar Rapids at the Olympic Southside Theater in the Nubo District, to be exact. Steve Shriver, in a room full of entrepreneurs. Does it get any better than that? Stick around. The Steve Shriver Podcast is brought to you by Ecolips, the original organic lip balm. Use the promo code PODCAST20 for 20% off your first order on Ecolips.com. Ecolips, all natural organic lip balm. Deeply connected with nature, applying beneficial organic ingredients to better people's lives. A proud certified B Corp founded in 2003. Ecolips, spread the good. And spread the promo code PODCAST20 in that promo code box. It's good for 20% off your first order on Ecolips.com.
Hey, hey, hey. Welcome to the Steve Shriver Podcast. Can y'all hear me? Is it coming through? Okay, cool, cool. We're doing a special edition of this podcast, the special EntreFest live edition. I don't even know if that's a thing, if this is the first, but we're doing it. We're doing it. This is a podcast, but we got a live audience. We're here. They're there. We're going to do our thing, and hopefully it's not as weird as I just made that. We're sitting here inside the beautiful Olympic Southside Theater in the New Bohemia District of Cedar Rapids. And doing this podcast with this live studio audience is such an amazing feat. EntreFest is the coolest entrepreneurial conference, amazing programming, outstanding speakers, all put on by this amazing organization called Nubo Co. And this year it's actually sold out, Joe. Can you believe
that? Wow, that's amazing.
It's sold out,
Let's hear it for that. Sold out EntreFest. Yeah.
So thank you, EntreFest, for having us and doing what you do. And we are here to spread the gospel of entrepreneurship. And that's what we do every week or 2 weeks in our episodes. Sitting across from me is Joe Coffey. He's my producer, great friend of mine. And one thing that people might not know about this is that the theme music that I thought was going to play before we started, but maybe you'll add that in for when we re-release this thing.
Yeah.
Joe and I made that. Joe produced it. I laid a little lick on it. I'm a harmonica player. I didn't have the key that is in that song, but I want to just check out the system here.
Bring it. I'm writing the music for the theme song, and I'm like, hey, Steve, you should play harp on this. So I sent it to him. 5 minutes later, he comes over, kills it. Good
and
stuff,
then,
Steve.
You know, once you are successful enough, you can just do whatever the fuck you want. So I just, you know, I brought my harmonica. All right, so a little bit about me, Steve Shriver. I am a serial entrepreneur. I normally say that I have five businesses in five different industries. And the funny thing is that over whiskey last night across the street, I actually realized that I have more than that. So I think I'm up to seven now. I don't often talk about the ones that aren't quite as sexy as like lip balm or, you know, a patented outlet, cause I own storage units and that's like, nobody ever comes up to me and like, hey man, how's those storage units going? They just don't. It just doesn't happen. But funny story about the storage units, and this is just part of being in business, is that I just got a call from the Marion Police Department yesterday, and they let me know that that two people were living in the storage units. And the craziest thing about it, so that's illegal. You can't do it. Cheapest rent in town. We're one of the few that have, like, we have electrical outlets in there. But one of them was even saving us a little electric. He had a solar panel they'd put out front to run his refrigerator and all this stuff. And the funniest thing about this is that my storage units are called Four Seasons Storage. So they took it literally. So anyway, I bought businesses, sold businesses, been absentee owner of businesses. I've had some things fail. I've had some successes and some wins. And I just love the entrepreneurial vibe and everything about it. It's in my blood, and my goal is to continually just help people share our stories and help each other solve problems so that we can all be successful in our own way.
So we normally pull a topic out of a hat that we get from you guys through social media, and Steve just runs it down. We like that entrepreneurial kind of, let's be grassroots, let's not over-rehearse. Steve's just sharing his stories as we draw them out. Today's a little different, though, because we are here live at EntreFest. We have a list of questions that have been submitted via social media, and we'll take them live here in the room as well and online, and there's a mic down there. So this will be fun to see where this goes, Steve.
Yeah, I know. So I have no idea what I'm going to say.
Cool.
I don't know, man. Are you ready? Are you going to read the questions to me?
Yeah, I'll start off.
Okay.
These are great questions, by the way. And if you haven't already, sign up for the Steve Shriver Podcast Facebook group. There's a Facebook page, but on the Facebook group, they're like really lively conversations about different episodes and whatnot. So let's start off with Corey Behrens. How do you understand more about who your customer is besides generalized information? We can understand age, gender, location, but how do we dive deeper into how they think and how they behave?
Okay, so for one, I have hired marketing agencies, and we've done focus groups and it's pretty fascinating, actually, like where we sit behind glass, you know, we sit behind, you know, a one-way glass mirror, and we watch the customers talk, interact with our products. It's super fascinating, super expensive. You can do it in a grassroots style, and you can just do little market research focus groups, and it's really tough to take a lot of it seriously. But the beautiful thing about that is like the nuggets that you take away from it, like that one thing that one person said, you know. But also just getting inside of the customer's head. I mean, I'm in the lip care business. The primary consumer is a female. And I'm not a female, but I have three daughters and a wife, and it's like I read the magazine. What are they consuming from other products to other media content, and then what are my competitors feeding them as far as content and new product development and innovation? And so, you to get inside your customer's head, you have to really, you know, be them. You know, read, you know, spend a day in their shoes or a minute in their shoes and read what they're reading, you know, and try to relate.
I heard you say something. You kind of acknowledged like, well, I'm not female. I'm not, you know, you don't walk the shoes of some of the customers. What advice do you have for entrepreneurs who, I mean, let's be honest, as entrepreneurs, it's all about ideas. You probably have great ideas. You act off of them. You build businesses off of them. But where do you draw that line and say, okay, I have great ideas, but what exactly is the customer doing? Because it can be dangerous if you always assume you are the customer and everything you think
is cool. Right. The biggest downfall is like having a bunch of dudes in a room trying to come up with the next lip balm innovation, right? It's not good. It's just not good. It'd be like having somebody purchase camping equipment that's never slept in a tent, you know? So I think you really, and that's part of the whole process in the planning process is getting, you know, when you understand your customer and making sure that in the plan you understand that you're not the customer and really just embracing that, it's probably one of the biggest contributors to failure, though, is when the person just assumes they're the customer, and it's like, I mean, the entrepreneur assumes they're the customer, and it's just not always the case.
All right, moving on. Here are a couple questions I'm going to combine from August Stolba and Tim McDougall. There was a bit of a thread talking about the money side of business, the social good side of business, weaving the B Corp thing, and it can be tricky to know, well, how much do you make it about social good? You still got to make it about profit. And on the B Corp side, you know, what are the specific challenges for those commitments and making all that happen?
Right. So, and I saw that thread, and it was like, you know, everybody talks their social game. Or why can't it just all be more about, you know, social movement and less about business? And there's a thing called greenwashing, which a lot of big companies do. And they're, you know, and they're just like, here's all the good we do. But, you know, they're killing the environment and possibly, you know, people in the process through their work practices, employment practices. You know, You got any more, you got to look deeper into the businesses that you're supporting. There are real, authentic businesses. We use the B Corp model, and this is a legal entity that you could become in some states. It's not an entity that's available to us in Iowa. So it's like you got your S Corp, your C Corp, your LLC, and you could potentially be a B Corp. We've got a third party service that audits us based on our performance. In what it is, the B stands for benefit, and we look at a triple bottom line. And so we get rated as far as people goes. We look at all stakeholders, not just the shareholders. A lot of big corporations, it's all about shareholder ROI. This is all stakeholders. We're talking employees, community, supply chain, anybody that is impacted by your business. That's the people side. And it does include the shareholders. And then you've got the planet side, people, planet, and profit. So planet is how big of a dent are we making in climate change or whatever. We use organic ingredients, and we use, we're looking for recycled or biodegradable packaging and et cetera, et cetera. And the planet is a really important piece to the puzzle. What a lot of people miss out on is the profit piece of that. And the profit is, it took me years to figure out that I was just like, top line, if I could grow this thing and I do good things, I'm doing good things and I'm growing sales, like the profit will take care of itself. And that is just absolutely not true. So what I like about this model is that true sustainability in business does require profitability. And the beautiful thing about profitability is that, you got to make money to give it away. And so if you're not making money, you shouldn't really be giving it away yet. So by building profit into the plan, that's how you start really driving change. So people, planet, profit, B Corp. You can go to bcorp.net, take a free assessment. I think it's an organization out of California. Beautiful thing. You can just, we get scored on all kinds of good stuff, man.
Let's do a survey here. I'm going to put the camera on the audience. Raise your hand if you believe in B Corps, you dig it, you think it's a good business model, and you want to support them. So, a lot of hands there.
Thank
now,
you.
Raise your hands if you work for one that is a B Corp. So, there's a lot of room between a lip and cup, right? Good idea, but how do you make it happen? Steve, any general advice for, it may seem daunting, right? But how do you start to take those steps?
Love it. So, the smaller the business, the easier it is, because you're creating less waste. You can create policies easier when you have, 1 to 10 employees versus having 500 employees. So it's really just, I'd say, if you're interested in the B Corp thing, go take the assessment or introduce the concept to your HR department or your sustainability director, and have the company just look at it. It could be a very simple assessment for a small business. For Ecolypse, we have 150 employees, and now it's a lot of stuff. And so it takes us about 4 months to fill this assessment out.
Ooh.
Yeah. So it's a commitment. Yeah.
Okay.
But it's
okay.
Just taking the step. And you know what? Even if you don't go down the road, you can learn a lot about how global framework has been developed for sustainability. And there might be things in there where you're like, oh, I didn't really know that, we get dinged if we have part-time employees. We get dinged because typically you can take advantage of part-time employees. So the more full-time employees you have as a ratio to part-time, the higher your score. And so now our goal is to just continue to improve that, increase that score every year.
Right on. Okay,
yeah.
Let's move on. This is from Lori Ramos. She says, when I win the lottery, I want to start another music store down in Nubo. Guitars, drums, mandolins, etc. Love it.
That'd be cool.
Jeannie Maybanks says, starting up a new business, financing the biz. How does it happen? Maybe we could use the music store in his example.
Right.
First, is that a good idea? And how does one go about it on the finance side?
Okay. I just think it's weird that you would... You got to win the lottery. If you win the lottery, don't blow... Go do some fun stuff, man. Don't start a business.
You're saying
lose
other people's money for the business.
The best way to make $1 million is to start with two. You know what I'm saying? Like, in business, it's just, it's crazy how easy it is to lose money. So I would be scared. Like, I'm, you know, so that whole concept just scares me. But really, I think you're talking about, like, the music store. Yeah, okay, how much does that really cost? Like, okay, honestly, you don't need to win. You could win enough on a scratch-off card to start a little music store with used equipment or something. And really, the biggest barrier to entry for small business is in for startups is finance. It like stops the conversation. It's like, man, I want to do that. I just can't afford it. I can't. And it's like, dude, how do you know you can't afford it? Have you, you know, there are ways to start businesses with very little money. And I like to start small, think big. You can take out a little bit of a loan, home equity line of credit, borrow from friends and family. As long as you're committed to it and you don't overextend yourself at the wrong time, anything is possible. So I feel like people like that, that's in their head. They're never going to, I mean, probably not going to start a business. Additionally, which is okay, like if they're not ready to just jump into it, but additionally, it's like practice makes perfect. So like, just if you go after that first business, that first sale, that first loan, and give it a shot, and just don't put your whole life on the line. Just try something small, prove it out, learn in the process, learn that you might rather work with a partner, an investor. And the more you do it, that's why I always say I'm practicing business rather than, you know, an entrepreneur. I want to practice like a lawyer or a doctor and continually improve. And so you're going to get better at finance. You're going to get better at borrowing money and putting packages together.
I hear you advising to do something, right?
Just do something.
There are steps to take. If you dream about it, let the day pass and do nothing and let that happen again. That's a week, a month, a year. And you just do something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, man, just do it. Put a pack of Snickers on your desk and try to sell it and make some money. I don't know.
All right, moving on. Beth Poppendick, doing research to determine where the business gaps are in a region. I love this idea because, you know, Cedar Rapids, it's not a major city, and maybe we'll go to other places, even visit on vacation or something, and you see a cool idea, you're like, wow, that might work here, so maybe seeing it somewhere else. But surely there are other ways to do research to figure out, oh, opportunity right here.
Right.
How do you do it?
Totally. Okay, so I like the whiteboard, and I like to draw out if I got a consumer packaged good that we're selling or a new product that we're launching, I whiteboard it out, and it's like, you know, cost and quality, and we figure out where that open space is for it. Super anecdotally, it's like the Olympic Southside Theater that we're sitting in right now. There was no independently owned event center that could hold 500 people in this town. This seemed like an opportunity, you know, just like Bohemia when we got it and we bought it, rebranded it. There was no real coffee shop that was delivering the quality and product and service and the community atmosphere that was, and it's thriving. SoCo Outfitters, draw on the map. We're like, you got to go to Iowa City or Cedar Falls. We do not have an independent outdoor retail store. So like, very simply put, I mean, just look at your surroundings and if it is a consumer packaged good or a service in a certain market, literally look at all the competition. I mean, I think that, you know, competitive analysis is super important, and you should spend a ton of time on it, and then go kick their ass.
So the question kind of talks about locality, and that's what you're speaking to, and you can do research and look around. There are plenty of businesses that are just strictly online, selling widgets or whatever, consulting, whatever, but I get the feeling, I know you, I mean, you kind of like the local thing. Hang a shingle,
yeah,
bring customers in. I mean, the old-fashioned sense of a business being a storefront, there's a lot of money in that if you do it right.
Right. I mean, so everybody's scared of brick and mortar, and like, it's as long as you're relevant, it doesn't matter if you're brick or mortar, if you're online or whatever. You have to be relevant. And so we created relevant products for people in this particular market. I mean, if you're going big, a lot of people are going for the 10, 20, 50, 100, you know, million-dollar businesses, and that's cool. Again, I think you could cut your teeth on something smaller. And even the exercise of owning a small brick and mortar, even if you did it as a pop-up shop for two, three months or whatever, you're going to learn something that you can apply to your next business. So, yeah, man, you could, I mean, you can, anything's possible, Joe.
You know, you're talking about pop-up shops. I go to South by Southwest every year for the interactive show, and the pop-ups are always amazing, and the buzz is crazy. You hear about them in Iowa City, sometimes in Cedar Rapids, but it seems to me like an underutilized, cool, let's create a thing. It could be 2 days, could be 2 weeks. I don't see enough here. I think there should be more.
And we should, I mean, it also is perfect. You know, we talk about, I mean, it's the perfect MVP, right? Minimum viable product. It's just like you can prove your concept for very little money. And if you're doing a pop-up, it's very likely you could lowball on rent. Just if you find an empty space, you rent it for cheaper than what they're asking and throw some stuff in there and sell it.
And think about the people in this room who would root for that, and everybody, all of your friends and people with an entrepreneurial kind of mindset, sharing the heck out of that when it comes up, telling everybody in the office, hey, did you hear about this pop-up? It's going to go down this weekend.
Right.
I think there'd be a lot of love for it.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep going. Ian Martin was talking about the cost of startups, developing a business plan that's part of funding. Joe Dooley had some comments around that as well. Approaching investors, business plan first, or do you get in cahoots with them first? Man. Or what's the order there?
Okay, for one, there is no absolute right way to start a business. There's no one way, I guess, you know. So I believe in writing stuff down. Like, I don't care if it's the back of the napkin or if it's on your phone notes or whatever, writing stuff down and eventually getting into a formalized plan. I mean, there's a lot of templates out there, Business Canvas. You can get, I mean, I have an old document that I use, and it's like literally take a business plan and just fill in the blanks. The act of just doing a business plan is, and I used to shit on business plans. I used to just be like, nah, man, you don't need that. Just go do it. And, you know, but what happens when you start writing stuff down is you also have the time, you're taking the time to choose the words and to question what you're actually putting on that document. And then it can become a working document to use when you're talking to your partners or, you know, the bank or the investors or your potential customers, that you can use it as a working document. And just, and the worst thing that can occur is when, and I've seen this happen, I've been a part of it, where I've got a business concept, I talk to you about it, it sounds like you think that this is a great thing, we should do this together, but what I've explained to you and how you've perceived it in your head is different than what I'm talking about. So like, perception. And so like SoCo, we had four partners in that group, and I not only put a bunch of stuff in the plan, I put pictures of what it was going to look like, you know, like renderings, just to make sure we're all on the same page. And then the nice thing about that is a year in, when somebody says like, why aren't we selling tennis equipment and getting into that? And I'm like, did we talk about fucking tennis equipment in this thing? No, we can talk about it now, possibly for the future, but this is not part of the plan. And so it's a nice way to have accountability as well.
Sounds like you like business plans now.
I like business plans. I mean, my grandpa always said communicate or deteriorate, you know? And it's like, it's a good way to help the communication process. And it's good when you're talking about financing, you gotta lock in your investors, you gotta lock in your financing. And it's another good place to, it's a good communication tool to use for that.
All right. Great questions. If anybody in the room has one or online, zap it to us, walk up to the mic, we'll work it in. I love this. James Welbs, why am I doing it?
Why am I doing it? Like, why am I doing entrepreneurship?
Yeah. Or maybe, why am I doing this
why
business?
Am I doing this business?
Do you have to have a good answer to that question?
I don't know, man. Okay. There is a shaman that you can go to at a place called Miraval, and it's down in Arizona, and they'll help you figure this out. Because I've been there. I think once in a while we get into these places where, I mean, normally it's like, I'm driven, I'm going to do this. I know, you don't question why you're doing it, because you're having fun doing it, or it's just like in your blood and you're moving forward. If you get to that point, though, sometimes, I mean, burnout occurs. I think you got to, I mean, like, literally, I've talked about this before. Like, I've gone to a therapist with similar questions. Like, when you lose your meaning, you got to find it or stop doing what you're doing. I mean, I did have a business, I'm trying to think, yeah, that it stopped enjoying. Mm. Like, yeah, no more fun, man. If it's no more fun, yeah, get move on.
Yeah, I hear you. And yeah. I bet you would answer that differently 20 years ago, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And I might answer it differently 2 weeks from now. I mean, that's the reality of that entrepreneurship thing. Like, he might not have said that a week ago or next week, but it's like, this is not always fun and games. You know, yeah. We don't always, like, you know, love this.
Sometimes getting through the hard times. We did a whole episode on that. You guys should check that out. What was it called? Getting Through the Tough Times of Entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Similar but different. This is from Travis Reck. After the 10-plus year struggle, is the reward worth it?
Right. So is the reward... I mean, what was his 10-year goal? I mean, is he sitting on a... I always... Every business that I have, like, I create it to sell it. Like, even whether I will sell it or not, it's like I'm creating a product. The business is the product, and it's something that I want to be valuable to somebody else. So... If it's worth it to me, if it's saleable, if it's valuable to somebody else, some of the things I'm involved with, this is one of them where there's more of a community ROI, and it's worth it right now to see people sitting here enjoying this and for this space to get used and contribute positively to the community. So, like, I don't know what his business is, but it's like, okay, I mean, do you have $1 million in the bank and that was your goal? Then yeah, man, it's worth it. $1 million is cool. So is the reward worth it after a 10-year struggle? He needs to see that same shaman. He needs to go to Miraval. Right?
I love it. All right, here's one we can kind of workshop in the room a bit. This is from Reagan O'Toole. If you have a winning idea, what are the first 5 steps to take? So here's an idea off of that idea. What if you guys actually shout one out? You probably won't want to give your best nugget that you're waiting to become rich on, but is there an idea? Maybe we could play with this, and Steve, based on the idea, you could talk about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 actual steps you would do with it. So does anybody have an idea you maybe seen somewhere else or something you're kicking around? Let's workshop this out. What do you got? Renting out speakers instead of renting out a DJ.
Oh, yeah. Shoot. I like it. I'm writing this shit down, man. I like it. Low barrier to entry. Okay. So I would literally, and I could rent these things out. Oh, my God. I own these. right. So, I mean, I guess ultimately it's like, is that, I would prove it out. I mean, that seems... It's a beautiful example of something that's easy to prove out. You buy some speakers, invest in the money. You could always sell them. You might not get back what you want.
So that's one.
Yeah.
Get the speakers.
Like, yeah. Get the speakers. Okay. And then rent them out. This might not even be a 5-step program right here. You know, I mean, look.
But how do you rent them out? Like, to who?
Put it up on Facebook.
Okay.
You know, put it out, friends and family. Look for graduation parties that are happening. I mean, contact venues. I mean, you have to make a sale, right? And so you could do that on a super small scale before you're getting your tax identification number and before don't overthink this one at all. Don't overthink it. This is, you know, I have this product. It's like, yeah, I have this product and it's like renting out your RV for a weekend, except even way less complicated. You know,
yeah.
I'm going to drop it off, deliver it, and pick it up. For that particular thing, I mean, I wouldn't even get an insurance policy or anything the first few times. Just prove it out.
Yeah. 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 And oh my gosh, high school graduation season. I don't know about you guys, but I just went to like 20 in the last 3 weeks and some had slamming music and it was cool and it added to it and some didn't and were missing it. But there's, you know, a timely part of the year where you just get the word out. You could really, right. you know, drop them off, pick them up. They've got their own playlists.
And then it's all just math. I mean, then it's just like, all right, how many do I need? And you could build it up as you needed it based on the demand, because they're fairly readily available. And then eventually, you know, build your team of people delivering these things out, and, you know, put your, you know, all your business stuff in place.
If you're going to DIY your own wedding in a backyard or somebody's nice yeah. country property, you know, get your favorite uncle, say, hey, bring that playlist. I'm renting the speakers. Put yeah. that guy in charge. We could probably go on forever That's with opportunities to rent these speakers.
I love it.
Do we have to give him a cut if we do this?
I think so. Because you have a lot of speakers too, man.
Actually, I do. I can speak to that a little bit. Yeah. HDMI issue here. When I was in college, I used to be a DJ at the local country station, and I programmed my college station. So I had access to all the music. This mm-hmm. was before the internet and playlists. And so I would rent from, what was the name of the music store in Waco, Texas? For $100, I would rent two PVSP2s and subs, and then I would charge sororities and fraternities like $500. And this was in like the early 90s. But wow. now the play, I think that's the key to this idea though.
Everybody's
people have
got
the playlist.
Yeah. Their own DJ. So you just need speakers. That's brilliant, man.
Good stuff. All right. Let's keep going. This one's from Eric, talking Ooh. About, when to seek investment versus bootstrap. We've kind of touched on this a little bit, but yeah. maybe you're bootstrapping along. You're doing that thing you talked about, Steve, you're proving it out. You're getting it going. And at some point, maybe it's figuring out, all right, I'm tired of bootstrapping. Mm-hmm. When and how do you go to Ann or some investors? What's that like?
Yeah, I mean, I personally, and I mean, I think it's different in big tech, and it's different with pre-revenue. You know, a lot of the stuff that's being worked on, you know, at Entrefest. And I personally don't enjoy the pre-revenue. I like the post-revenue, and, you know, like, and so I know that investment is required when you have these bigger, lofty goals, et cetera. But I say bootstrap all you can, because it can't hurt you. If you can pull it off on your own dime and just piecing it all together, you owe people less. You're not indebted to the investors. You might, and again, I'd rather go to the bank and take out a loan and make that my investor partner rather than an investor. I mean, I think there's a little bit of a feeling of disconnect sometimes when you take investment capital and you're like, yeah, I mean, because I always ask when somebody pitches me, I'm like, well, how do I get what's my ROI? And a lot of smart people that like are here, they can show me that. It's still not a bank note. Like, I like having to chase the payment. I want to take out a loan, and I got to chase that payment, which means I got to chase the sales, and I got to stay hungry to go after it.
Is that a DNA problem for some people, using yeah. the credit cards in the bootstrap phase, or borrowing from Uncle Jack, or getting mm-hmm. a mortgage on your own house? I hear a lot of entrepreneurs talk about that is the way to go. That excites you. Yeah. Some people, they just are like, oh my God, I could never do that.
Yeah, my opinion is that it's less risky personally to take investor capital. But I tell you what, it's easier to have the conversation with the bank about struggling than, in my opinion, than investors. But I don't like other banks. That's what they do. They rent money out, yeah. man, you know.
And they don't investors? Need points. It's just a little interest, right?
Yeah. Okay. And right now money's cheap anyway, so yeah.
Okay.
Let's keep going. I'm a bootstrapper.
More questions from Eric. When to go full-time and leave your gig to pursue it? I bet a lot of people in this room could relate to that. You get right. an idea. You're bootstrapping, you're going, it's starting to get somewhere, but you have this other thing called a real job, paying the bills. When right. and how, you know.
Right. Okay, the worst thing I would ever want to do is be the person that convinced somebody to quit their job, and then they fail, and then they're like, well, dude, Steve Shriver said quit their job, man, what's up? So, but I say push it as long as possible. Like, I have had to... I was working as a security guard when I had my first business. I mean, like, work once you're at, you know, once your business is creating revenue and you're working 100 hours a week, you know, and you or 80 or 120, whatever it might be, and you're confident enough to take that leap. It's like then, you know, you've proven it out. drop the job. But if you can keep both going, it's like, I mean, keep them both going as long as you can. Wait for your boss to piss you off and then just be like, you know, then you got your leverage. Then you're like, dude, I don't need you.
Is it good to be a little scared? I mean, that sounds like scary stuff, right?
Scary. Whatever, dude. Like, I mean, what? Okay. Nobody in the United States of America has ever died from a failed business, Joe. They haven't. So you go do it, and then let's just say you fail. Then you go get a job, man.
So you've had some that didn't work out.
Yeah.
Do you ever, I mean, what's that like? Is it like, oh, if only, or are you like way past it and you're glad you did it, you learned from it, or,
like carpet cleaning business?
Yeah.
I mean, no, it's a big, so then I ended up with $100,000 in debt that I had to pay down, right? Or the years where we lost boatloads of money but we still had to pay taxes for some stupid reason, and I had to sell my car to pay my taxes that year, you know, but I like riding my bike, so it wasn't all that bad. Yeah, no, it's a bummer, dude. Failure is a bummer. But otherwise, what are we here for? And like, then what, you're going to regret that you didn't try something? But again, I think that's where on this question, it's like the beautiful thing about it is you can have that side hustle. And I don't think that's a bad word. You know, it's like have a side hustle. And try to turn it into your main hustle.
So you guys listening to the podcast in podcast land, you can't see what I see, but we're in a room full of entrepreneurs. And as Steve talks about some of these hardships and the tough stuff, I see heads nodding. Like there's a passion and a commitment. People here get it. And in some ways, it almost, you've used the word prove a lot. In some ways, if you're sitting back trying to be a Shark Tank shark, and just, I'm an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. make this happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a big disconnect between kind of going through some struggles to get to the good stuff, right?
Right. And what makes them good, though, is that the sharks at least they've gone through this.
Yes.
And they know the right questions. And they can call it out. If they know somebody's like purely the technician and the micromanager that can't scale, well, you got to know that that's a partner you're getting in with. And then can you work with them, first of all, and then can you provide that, you know, that weakness that they have?
All right.
Yeah.
Shifting gears. Here we go. Oh, this is huge. How do you decide which marketing techniques to use? Which platforms? How do you shape the message? Do we send the e-blast out Wednesday at 4? I read that's the best time, but no, it's Tuesday at 3. You know, this never-ending moving target. I mean, how do you market? Where do you even begin, Steve?
All right. Here's one thing that's a fact. I know that half of my marketing is working. I just don't know which half. So, you know, it's something that, again, as we practice becoming better business people, we practice different techniques. And we work, you know, it's like we just fired our marketing firm up in Minneapolis because we thought they should have been doing better than they were. It depends on what industry you're in, how you're trying to get to the customer. But I mean, at this point in history, we have to be where the customers are at, which is typically right here on their phones. And so how do you reach them? What is the message? And it's really trial and error. So like, and when we get into digital advertising, it's full on optimization. And I've seen us go from, the crazy thing now is like, it's not just tech, right? That's advertising tech. This place is optimizing. The Olympic is optimizing its Facebook ads to reach that person right when they shoot the speaker, the keynote, Marcus this morning. Holy crap. Did you guys see Marcus this morning? Oh my God. Oh, I hope I got it. I want to have him on this podcast because I was like, he had us laughing. He had us crying. Is he in here? Oh my God. It was amazing. So, but he even said he was like, he got his advertising down to the point because he knew the prison system so well that when people would get out from their families, and he's selling a product that's for families that have somebody in the prison system, first thing you do when you get out of your car or get out of the visitation is you go to your car and you check your email, your Facebook, and your, you know, your text. And he's like, and that's where he hit their Facebook ad, right in the perimeter of the between 12 and 5, you know, the perimeter of the prison. And it's like, that's it.
Genius.
But it took him a while to figure that out.
Okay.
So
here's something I figured out. I'm going to share an observation, but tie it to a question, because I think I see something going on here that everyone in this room may be curious about. I had my youngest daughter graduate from high school recently. We had a grad party, and we got these burritos from Bruhemia. Cold coffee, hot coffee. Andrea delivered this stuff, and it went so fast. It was delicious. It was great. And I got to chit-chat with Andrea about the timing of the pandemic. People are kind of getting out, feeling safe again. We're in a venue that was, I thought it was genius and needed and tons of opportunities. Then the pandemic hit, and you guys kind of had to hold your breath underwater for a while. But everybody's coming out. So am I correct in seeing that, you know, if you're already sitting good with Bruhemia and the Olympic, and people are wanting to drink coffee again in a coffee shop, they're wanting to, let's have that reception after all. Are there opportunities to tie into this great timing post-pandemic, everybody coming out of it? Is it just for people who already kind of have their cleats in, or is this a good time for anybody?
Man, I believe that the Roaring Twenties are coming. Like that whole, I mean, I think people, I've never seen so many people out in like, we got pent up last year, and now people, we're, you know, this place is rented through the end of the year from Thursday to Sunday or Saturday. It's just, and Bohemia's got the line out the door even on days when it's not Entrefest, and Soko's, yeah, people are ready to go. So that to me spells opportunity to a T. That's where, I mean, yeah, I think this is the best time to start a business, man.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Love it. All right. Victoria Becker says, I think I'm just scared to fail again. I think a lot of us can relate to that. Maybe if you have failed once, get back up on the bike and keep pedaling. But that could be scary. What about advice for someone who's given it the good old, you know, and maybe it's not happening right away?
Vicky, she's my cousin. She lives in Arizona, I think. But she, I'm like, come on, man. Like, dude, I'm just scared to fail again. Have you ever been in a car accident, a little fender bender? Did you ever get back in the car and drive, you know, get back on the horse? I think she did have a small business. It didn't go well. Take what you have learned, apply it, you know, don't repeat the same steps, and apply what you learned and do it again and do it again and do it again if you're that passionate about it. I think that's a weak statement. It's like failure. I mean, unless there's some massively crazy devastation, entrepreneurial PTSD, you know, that just messed you up for good. But I think in general, man, you got to just keep pushing forward. It's that resilience factor and that persistence to win.
When you mentioned passion, it made me think, well, that makes a lot of sense, right? If you love the widget you're selling or whatever, you already love it. You didn't just identify an opportunity in a market hole, and then therefore it's not working, and there's no passion for that market hole, right?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and especially the majority of the small businesses that people are looking at starting, they don't have a ton on the line. It's a blow to the ego to fail. We don't get the greatest family support always. I mean, right now, entrepreneurship is cool, but it's still scary for people. Everybody's still like, well, you got to go to college and you got to get a degree to do, you know, I mean, there's still a lot of that inertia and philosophy, but fear and self-doubt, I've said it before, that's our number one enemy, and it will continue to be, especially if we say to our kids, you know, if we instill that fear and make them a weaker person, we're not doing them any service. So like, we need to build their self-esteem up and let them believe that they can achieve what they want to achieve. And then you're not going to say silly things like, I'm just scared to fail again. You're going to be like, you know what? I'm going to go after it again, and I'm going to try really hard not to fail. And you just might not.
All right. Here's one. This reminds me of a story. I'm going to have to share the futon story, Steve. So Harris Zave says, one of the hardest lessons I learned the hard way was when a good idea wasn't good enough to keep spending money on. So we've all had ideas. We all have lists in our phones, yeah, and we're just, oh, that might be a thing. So years ago, our kids were in school together working on like an idea fest or something, and they came to us looking for ideas, and I was eating a salad, and I thought, croutons are always vegetable flavored, like onion or garlic. Why don't they make croutons based off fruit flavors and call it croutons? And I thought, this is, we're going to be rich. We'll start it off. The kids are going to win the invention croutons. Fair. Steve's croutons. Like, it failed miserably. It didn't even get out of the first round of right. the kid fair. I thought it was a winner.
Croutons.
I still do. Croutons. Who wouldn't buy a box of fruit? So anyway.
Yeah.
When you have a good idea that you think is good...
Hey, don't quit your day job.
How does one learn that maybe this is not a good idea? Who do you listen to? How?
I mean, in the question he wrote was, one of the hardest lessons I learned the hard way was, when a good idea wasn't enough to keep spending money on, or when an idea wasn't enough to... It's like, if you have to keep spending money on it, and you're not, you know, you're not getting traction, and you're not... building a, you know, a brand out of it, or building a you know, any momentum, then is it actually a good idea? Are you relevant? Is anybody actually looking for a Fruton? No. so like, you got to be relevant. If you try it out, I mean, I had an invention way back in the day. It was called Sweat Jet, and it was like a tube that you wore on your head, and then when you're working out, it sweats and it goes into the tube, and then and it shoots it out the back.
Yeah.
Sweat Jet 2000. And I thought for a minute it was the best idea ever. And but I decided to stop making prototypes because everybody that saw me in it made fun of me. And they're like, I would never freaking wear that. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to. So stop investing. So it turns out, you know, idea for me is a four-letter word. It's like the easiest thing. Like, we can sit around like, oh man, I got the best idea. I'd rather have like a mediocre idea and great execution on that idea, and rather than this great idea that you never do anything with. Yeah,
that's worth it. We should have brought the hammer of truth.
Boom.
I mean, that's
right.
Yeah, that's hard for some people to hear, but you just laid it down.
Yeah, man, ideas are easy, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, but doing something with them is the hard part.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Do we have, are we still going, or what's?
Let's see, it's 107. We go till 15, is that right?
Do we want to try an audience?
Anybody, please come to the mic if you have a question, or if you just want to build off something. Sure. If you don't mind, go to the mic so we can get this to podcast land too, and Steve will repeat it for the room because that's a podcast mic.
Okay. Yeah. Working on it versus in it? Yeah. Okay. So what's it, working on the business versus in the business? The first business book that I read was Michael Gerber's E-Myth, and it's the entrepreneurial myth. And it's all about the dude that's, you know, if you're a plumber and all you do is do the plumbing, you know, you're always going to be the plumber. And what I have in what I started doing early on was like, okay, I got to take an hour out of my day and work on the business. And this is working on the bigger picture, the strategy, the scale, the systems, and building systems so that I don't, that allow other people to work in it, so I could just keep working on it. And ultimately, through that process of having my organizational chart with my name in all of the buckets, I was able to slowly remove my name out of production manager and out of VP of HR and ultimately, I worked my way up to the only box that I had in there by working on the business and creating systems to run the business, and people run the systems, the system run the business, is that then I worked my way up so that the only box that I'm in is the owner box. And then I don't have to go there anymore. If I want to, and this is how I am with the seven things I'm involved with, it's like I choose where I want to go. If I want to grow something, acquire something, if I got to do triage, sometimes you got to do triage. Great. Jump in, work for a few weeks or a few months or however long it takes. But knowing when you're working on it and how to get out of that and ultimately work yourself out of a job. And the other thing that's beautiful about that book is that, and that philosophy is that it taught me to blame the systems instead of blaming the people. And when we blame the systems, then we repair the systems, and it's really putting the blame on back up towards the top. It's not blaming the employee that did it wrong. It's saying, like, how did that system fail and how do we make sure that we improve upon that next time?
So I have a question for you related to that. I mean, you're good at a lot of things. If I were to take any logo in this town or a perceived business model on what this company's doing and say, what do you think? I bet you'd have good thoughts as far as what could be tightened or whatever. And so I know in your own businesses, you just talked about kind of pulling yourself away. Mm-hmm. You've got an entrepreneur brain. You want to free that up for other ideas. I've seen situations where a brand manager would not let a graphic designer do the graphic design, and they mm-hmm. keep grabbing the spatula and changing things. Mm-hmm. And I would think a lot of people who are kind of good at what they do, they can't stop grabbing the spatula and right. letting people do. Like, how do you not do that and be that way?
Look, because everybody's like, oh man, you must be really busy. You got, you know, 7-5 businesses, whatever. And I'm like, I mean, not really. Because everybody else is doing that. They all have the spatula. My other little thing is like, when in doubt, delegate it out. I mean, I want to free up as much time as possible so I can enjoy life or focus on the area of the business that I want to do. But that's another big barrier to scale. It's like nobody can do it like I do it. Well, you know, then, I mean, I don't know what to say other than maybe lower your expectations a little bit of people. Because you're right. It'll be really hard for anybody to do it as good as you, but can they do it good enough to keep the business going?
So you're in meetings sometimes and say the campaign idea, you don't think it's as good as it could be if you spent more time on it, but you just let that fly? You kind of let go enough?
If it's inconsequential to the end product, I mean, if it's a major deal,
I'm in
on it, man.
Yeah.
I'm in on it. Look, we have a product development team at Ecolypse, but we just spent millions of dollars on the acquisition for Bug Soother. And I said right out of the gate, like, I'm going to run the new product development team for Bug Soother because it's a new investment, new category, new regulations. Like, I'm going to drive that. And it, you know, so that would like be the most micromanaging that I would get into. But then once it starts flowing, then I just slowly step out of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
We should probably take a moment. I'm going to put the camera on the crowd here. Was it just me, or when you read that Steve Shriver and Ecolypse bought Bug Soother, you were like, that's cool. I already like that company. This is going to be great. I mean,
Hopefully.
It's such an iconic brand, and knowing it's in the folder now with you guys, and you're going to put your brain power on it. Anything to share there about, you know, this stage of entrepreneurship, kind of acquiring a known and loved effective brand at they do?
It's really, you know, it's scary. It like literally is really scary to make an acquisition of something that's, you know, that's big. But again, we mitigated the risk by really doing solid due diligence. And that was the other thing of like knowing what we're good at and just continually digging in and making sure that, you know, actually it's like we started with the process trying to prove that it was a bad decision to purchase it. And in the end, we proved that it was a good decision. So it was like our goal was to prove ourselves out of it because it would be a pain in the butt, super risky, all that stuff. And in the end, we're like, you know what? We can't find anything wrong with it that's going to deter us from purchasing it. So,
well, we're all rooting for you and it and Bug Soother and Ecolypse, the whole family. That's going to be great.
Man. Yeah. Thank you.
We are running out of time. Steve, final thoughts, little pearls of wisdom to spill out as everyone goes ye therefore?
If you are in a startup situation, I just don't overthink it. Keep moving. You know, don't let the paralysis by analysis kick in. Don't overthink what you're doing. Just do keep taking steps forward. Get your product, your service out to market. Learn from it and improve upon it and keep kicking ass. Thank you guys so much for being here. Yeah.
All right.
The Steve Shriver Podcast is brought to you by Ecolips, the original lip balm. Use the promo code PODCAST20 for 20% off your first order at ecolips.com. Keep up with the show at SteveShriverPodcast.com and the Steve Shriver Podcast on Facebook.